Welcome to the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined today by columnist Barry Trammell. And we finally have real basketball to talk about. I'm very excited about this. We're podcasting Saturday night. The Thunder has beaten the Jazz 110-94 in their season restart opener. And, you know, really, the Thunder outscored the Jazz 29-15 in the first quarter. They went on a 10-0 run in the middle of that first quarter. And really, the game lacked much suspense the rest of the way. I mean, it was about as commanding of a win and convincing of a win the Thunder could have had to resume its season. What were your main takeaways, Barry?
Well, my main takeaways is just how dominant they were that first half and really were able to just coast the rest of the way. It's one thing to hold the Jazz down. This is not a very good offensive team, the Jazz, without Bogdanovich. And, you know, I can see, you know, they didn't score a ton on New Orleans, and New Orleans can't play a lick of defense.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But the Jazz, they play defense, and I thought the Thunder offense was outstanding. You know, they end up shooting over 50%, and that's with a sort of a ragtag fourth quarter. They make 10 out of 26 three-pointers. They turn the ball over too much, 21 turnovers, but – for the most part, you know, they just played really good offense. And if you score on the Jazz, you're going to win because they don't score a ton. So, Thunder had what? Let's see. They had, you know, 66 points at halftime.
Yeah.
You know, 44 in the second half. But, you know, 66 points in the first half against Utah is going to win you the game almost all the time.
Really balanced scoring, too, from the Thunder. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he I think, kind of quietly led the team with 19. Chris Paul was really good in this one. He had 18 points. Steven Adams had 16. Gallinari had 15. Dennis Schroeder had 13. And they, I mean, the Jazz's offense just could not get going. Donovan Mitchell led the Jazz with 13 points. We'll get to that defense in a little bit. I want to start out with what you wrote about in your column after the game. It was very strange, I thought, to see how confident the Thunder seemed to be attacking, going right at Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert. It was a strategy that might have caught the Jazz off guard a little bit, but somehow worked for the Thunder.
Well, here's the downside to not being in the bubble, or even if you're there, it's downside because you can't really do a lot of quizzing. I think there was probably some great game planning by Billy's staff tonight because Steven Adams sort of alluded to it and basically said the way the Jazz defensive scheme is a little bit bizarre, he said. And I think the Thunder, what it looked like is that Gobert would drop pretty deep. And when he was deep is when they didn't mind going at him.
Mm-hmm.
So – and later, who was it? Was it Billy talked about the guards made good decisions. They didn't commit too early. So the more you wait, sort of the deeper Gobert goes. And so you had some SGA great finishes around the basket when Chris Paul shot over him. Steven Adams muscled him a couple times. So if you can have that kind of success against Rudy Gobert, then you're in great shape anytime you're playing the Jazz.
Yeah, well, it's a really good point you brought up about sort of the drop coverage and, you know, Gobert being kind of stuck closer to the rim. Andy Larson, who covers the Jazz, sort of mentioned it on Twitter. He was like, we've seen this movie before. He was alluding to Chris Paul is really good against the Jazz, and he was obviously good against the Jazz in those series he had with the Rockets, where Chris is so good at getting to that mid-range. So if Rudy Gobert is sort of tucked inside and pulled off of him, the Thunder, one of the best mid-range shooting teams in the NBA, really had success at that. So, I mean, that dynamic is interesting. So with Chris attacking the rim, with Shai attacking the rim, and Steven Adams, he was pretty strong inside himself. I mean, it was a very good game plan, and I think you're right. Credit to Billy Donovan and his staff.
Now, And what you said originally, Chris Paul is really good at that, is true. He's also really good at everything. You know, he's just a wonderful player. And you can see that. You know, he was tonight, you know, he was just in total command. I was worried. I don't know what happened. We didn't get a chance to ask about it. But, you know, there, I think it was the second quarter, something happened. He got bumped. He got scraped. I don't know. But he got upset. Who was it? Royce O'Neal, I think, banged into him or something. He got upset. The next thing you know, he's over there on the bench. And Donnie Streck's tending to him.
Yeah.
And for crying out loud, you think, uh-oh, this is not good. But, you know, the way it turned out, it went fine, and he returned and was his usual great self. He's a plus 27, played 27 minutes and was a plus 27 tonight.
Yeah, he played a little bit there in that fourth quarter, 7 of 11, made his only three of three from the line, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals. I thought he was the Thunder's best player today, as he's been for most of the season. And, you know, it was a big question. I mean, like what I wrote about after the game is, not only did you wonder how Chris Paul would come back after the layoff as an older guy, or the younger guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, Darius Bazley, Hamidou Diallo, but you had no idea what this team would look like after almost 5 months off. And it's just one game. I fully realize that, but the early results are this team looks almost exactly, if not better, than the team that they were in early March when they had won 8 of 10 and when they were one of the hottest teams in the NBA.
Yeah, you know, it's – to me, it had a little bit of an NCAA tournament feel. And – the reason I say that is that it's not a long layoff. You know, I've covered NCAA tournament teams that played literally 4 days after, you know, 3 days off since their last game. But the NCAA tournament always has such a new feel, especially when you're not a dominant team and you're just sort of a middle-of-the-road team. And you go in and it's a different environment. It's a neutral court. You're playing somebody sort of fresh and new. Now, Utah's not fresh and new, but there have been four and a half months since anybody played. So you just didn't know what to expect. And you come out and, you know, anything can happen. And what happened tonight is the Thunder just dominated and looked really good. Some of this is what, you know, we've been talking about this for, what, 3 months, 2 months. Utah is a really good matchup for the Thunder. The Thunder would like to play Utah in the playoffs.
Every middle team in the West is going to want to play Utah.
Right. And that's mostly because of Bogdanovich is hurt. He makes a big difference. You know, I looked at that. You know, that's not a great bench. Here's their bench tonight.
He was averaging 20 points a game, Bogdanovich.
Yeah. Here's their bench, the Utah bench tonight. Jordan Clarkson, Emmanuel Mudiay, Georges Niang, and Tony Bradley. That's their –
yeah.
Four guys off the bench.
Clarkson's a definite spark plug, but behind that, you're not getting much.
That's right.
So
Utah is the preferred destination in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, exactly. This is – you got a firsthand look at that matchup tonight. And, you know, I kind of wonder, do you think the Thunder was at an advantage at all that – the Jazz had the excitement of playing on opening night, you know, all eyes on them for the restart. Today felt a little bit different. I mean, it was day three of the games, but day one for the Thunder. Like, do you think that had anything to do with it?
I think that's possible. That was an emotional win for Utah the other day. I mean, not emotional. It was a good win. It's a game they could have lost easily. I do think, though, that you could counter that and say, hey, Utah had the advantage in that this is a crazy environment. None of these guys have ever played in front of anything like this. Basically an empty gym, except, you know, they're throwing virtual fans up there on the side of the wall. So
Chris Paul Jr. on the
– right, exactly. Thundor or whoever was in there for the – anybody else. So, to me, it – if there was an emotional letdown for Utah, it's countered by the fact that they at least got some comfort level mm-hmm. on playing in a kooky environment. Well, this is, you know, the first game for the Thunder. So I know they've played in, exhibitions down there, three games each, but I think that was probably a wash.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. All right, let's get to a few other things that stood out. What did you think of? I know you wanted to talk to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander after the game. We didn't get the chance to. We talked to Steven Adams and Chris Paul, and again, like, those were both probably only 4 minutes, so we're not able to get as much post game as we normally would. But like, what were you wanting to ask Shai after the game?
I wanted to talk to him about attacking Gobert. Most people don't attack Gobert because he's the best in the league, you know, at defending the rim, and he just changes the game. But and not just attack, but the pick and roll. You know, Rudy Gobert is a fabulous pick and roll defender because he can cover so much ground with his arms, his wingspan, and both Chris and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander were really good on the pick and roll today. You know, Thunder was really good. They had a good first quarter, 29 points. Only had two assists in the first quarter. They get to that second quarter, and all of a sudden, all kinds of good things start happening offensively. I think it was 11. I could be wrong. I think it was 11 assists in the quarter. Nine assists. They had nine assists in the second quarter alone. SGA had five in the second quarter. Chris Paul had three. So they were really doing a great job moving the ball, making the Jazz work, and it just, you know, everything clicked. So I wanted to talk to SGA about that. Who was it? Somebody asked Chris after the game about the development of the young guys. And, you know, we don't think of SGA as a young guy, but the truth is he turned 22 during the break. So he's still a young player, and he was really, you know, he looked better than ever to me tonight. I mean, he just
– some of those finishes around the rim, like the spin on the ball.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy, he had six assists. And
he only averages 3.3 assists per game, so.
Right. He's not a huge – yeah, he's not a huge assist guy. So, I, to me, that was a very good sign. He and Chris Paul combined for 13. So, I thought it was just solid all the way on and very, very good, very good signs for the future in Orlando.
Yeah, you know, Shai, the evolution of his game has happened so rapidly. I think that next step, though, is more of a – playmaking guard. Like, if he's so good in isolation, he's really good off the dribble, attacking the rim. Tonight, I think he continues to show what an expanded skill set looks like. He's starting to fall in love with the step back three-pointer, which he's able to shake guys because he's got such an unorthodox speed about him that I think he's just tough to defend. But the other part of that is, if he can continue to be a better passer and say he can average even six assists per game next year, that's just going to take him to a whole new level. I thought the Thunder's offense was pretty crisp. Like, obviously, it's no news to anyone that Chris Paul is a good passer, but just some of the extra passes that he has when they're just swinging around the arc, to find Gallinari in particular, I thought the ball movement was really good, and there's not much to complain about from an offensive perspective. That the Thunder did. They shot 39% from three. They shot 53% from the field. There's one point I checked the game notes to see what the best percentage they shot all season was. I think it's 59%, but they were at like 58% sometime in the third quarter. So the offense was really ticking. Yeah, I mean, it's an encouraging sign for the Thunder. You mentioned the young guys. I wanted to ask you, let's start with Hamidou Diallo. I find Hamidou Diallo to be one of the more fascinating guys on this roster, just because this wing rotation is so competitive. You've got Lu Dort starting, you've got Diallo, you've got Robertson, you've got Abdul Nader. And clearly Billy Donovan favors Diallo to be that second wing off the bench. And he actually played pretty decently today. I still think Robertson could maybe overtake him, but what do you, are you as bullish on Diallo as Donovan seems to be?
No, but I'm a lot more bullish on him now than I was 4 or 5 hours ago. I mean, for crying out loud, I was stunned he played this much. And
he by the end of the 20 minutes,
by the end of the game, at the end of the game, the Thunder threw in this new guy. I thought it was Hervey or somebody. You know, nobody's got their name on the back. Everybody's changed their hairdo. So I thought, well, they got Hervey in the game. That's good. And then they threw him the ball with about 2 minutes left. He makes a really good play and makes a bank shot, I think. And the announcer said, back it by Abdul Nader. I said, oh, yeah, Abdul Nader's on this team, and he's just now playing. Where's he been all game? Well,
he played 3 minutes.
He's been watching Hamidou Diallo play all day. That's what he's been doing. So I wanna, why has Nader fallen out of the rotation? In March, he was the eighth or ninth man. It wasn't. I mean, he was playing. He is automatic. He's playing.
He has some really clutch shots at Boston in their last.
Yeah. Now maybe they just got to the point where they're saying, "Hey, we're playing Abdul Nader as our backup power forward with Bazley out, and Bazley's back, so he's out of the rotation." Is that maybe that's as complicated as it gets? But I thought that was very strange for Abdul Nader to sort of fall off the radar so quickly.
Yeah, Diallo in 20 minutes, he was 3 of 6. He was 2 of 2 from three. He's a career, like, 18% three-point shooter. He had 4 rebounds. He played pretty well. He, like, Hamidou Diallo, you can rely on him for, like, being the most athletic guy on the floor most nights, and also having super high energy. Now, sometimes he's out of control, both on offense and on defense. He fouls too much. He's a very raw offensive player. And, like, I'm surprised he did play this much, especially with what we're talking about with Nader. Like, you've got all of these defensive wings you can throw out that pretty much do the same thing. Nader can really shoot the ball. So that they're going to Diallo instead of Nader, I thought is interesting. You mentioned how it could be because of Bazley's injury, and now he's back now. I think it could also be they want to know if Hamidou Diallo is going to be a part of this team's future as another young guy. I think he just turned 22 as well. Nader is, what, 26, I think. Not as young as some people think. So maybe that's a part of it as well.
Maybe so. But, you know, this is a guy, you mentioned it, in Boston, the previous game, March 8th, they go to Boston, they win by 1 point. So it's down to the wire game. He plays 17 and a half minutes, takes 4 shots. So is this a guy they like or they count on? Mm-hmm. And then today, you know, he's barely a blip. Terrence Ferguson doesn't play, I don't think, until the fourth quarter or until the game's over, whichever that was.
4 minutes late in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. So, but here's Diallo playing a bunch.
Bazley played 29 minutes.
Bazley played 29 and had a good game. He had 10 points and 7 rebounds and 2 or 3 from 3-point range. So, he looked pretty good, I thought. He looked like he was getting with it.
Mm-hmm.
They might have a player in Darius Bazley. I don't know. I'm not saying he's an all-star, but they might have a
– mind since our last podcast.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a guy we hadn't seen. Was it January or February last time he played? He hadn't played in a long time.
Yeah, he missed the last 11 games, I think.
Yeah, then he played in February then. So, but he was really good tonight. So, you know who else I thought was good tonight? He didn't shoot it particularly well, but I just thought he's good all the way around. It was Lu Dort. Lu Dort. He played great defense. He seemed confident on offense, assertive.
I like that he's willing to shoot it.
Yeah, I do too. And his shot looks better. It doesn't always go in, but it looks okay.
It's high. I'll tell you that much. When it goes in, it hardly touches anything. Lou Dort, I thought, played really well. He did not shoot the ball well, 2 of 8. But the guy is just so far ahead defensively of where most rookie guards are. And he's drawing the assignment, as he normally does, against the opposing team's best offensive player. And tonight that was Donovan Mitchell. Mitchell was 5 of 15, 0 of 4 from 3. Just to not play well. And, like, Lou Dort continues to be – like, when we mentioned those other wings, like, at this point I'm not even going to clump Lou Dort in with those guys because he's clearly ahead. He's the starter on this team. The other guy that did play, though, Andre Robertson, he played 5 minutes in the first half. They were the last 5 minutes of the second quarter. I don't really know how much to read into that because he did play in the first half, but he also did not play at all in the second half.
Yeah. What I read into it is I don't know what's going through Billy's mind, but I like what I saw out of Andre. He's pretty active. He got a nice block. He was guarding Donovan Mitchell there for a good chunk of that time, so he didn't get burned or anything. So I liked what I saw there, and it looks to me like Andre Robertson is going to eat up Terrence Ferguson's minutes. That's what it looks like to me. That's what I'm smelling on the tea leaves. So they all of a sudden have a lot of wings now. They don't necessarily have a lot of great wings, but they do have more wings than maybe we thought.
Seems like a long time ago that Terrence Ferguson was the locked in starter on this team.
Yeah, it seems like 9 months ago.
He's gone from starter to just like come into the game when it's a blowout. So I don't know. I know I talk about it a lot on these podcasts, but I find the wing rotations fascinating. I want to write about Hamidou Diallo soon because, again, he is clearly
well-liked. I wonder how much is situational. In other words, it's Utah, so these guys work best. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much of it is timeline. Hey, we got 8 games left. We need to play Hamidou, see what we got. Those kind of decisions. I'd like to know what's the weight factor and all that different kind of stuff. We know coming off the bench, we know that Noel's going to play. We know that Schroeder's going to play. And truthfully, we know Darius Baisley's going to play. When he's been healthy, he's played all year as the backup power forward. Mm-hmm. But all those other guys, Nader, Ferguson, Robertson, Diallo, could be anybody at any time. There seems to be no rhyme or reason.
I wrote about the bench the other day, and I would not go as far as to say this is a strong bench because it doesn't have a ton of experience outside of, you know, Schroeder and Noel. That's about the best bench duo you could have as far as a big man and a guard, and they work really well together. But they've got a lot of options. Like I think it's deeper than it is maybe like high end quality. How do you and the bench is obviously going to shrink in the playoffs. Like, are you liking this bench more than you maybe thought you did back when we saw them in March?
Probably not. I think it looked okay today because Utah's bench is so bad. But I think in most games, the Thunder is going to have the inferior bench. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to make their hay when the big guys are on the court. So,
When Schroeder leaves, which could be any time now, that's going to be a big
one. Yeah. Although I will say this. Out of the big five, I thought Schroeder clearly was the most out of sync today. He was 5 of 8 and scored 13 points, but he had 5 turnovers, only 2 assists. I didn't think he looked rock solid. Well, I thought all the other main guys looked pretty rock solid. So I'm anxious to see if he, you know, and he sometimes does that. You know, he's not as consistent as Chris Paul or SGA or somebody. He can go way high and pretty low. So he's one I want to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Any other like in-game stuff that stood out that we didn't get to?
I thought Steven Adams was excellent. 16 points, 11 rebounds, 3 missed shots, blocked 2. Could add some more. You know, that one play didn't go his way when they wiped out a bucket and gave him a technical foul. But I thought he was really good against a guy that is hard to play against.
You know, so, Billy has talked a lot about, especially during this restart, of how good of a passer Steven is and sort of underrated. He had that pass to Dort that was really good. He hasn't racked up a ton of assists this year, but he's averaging a career high by a pretty large mark. Like, it's kind of interesting to see him sort of develop in that way. And it was not a super old guy, but you know, this late into his career that he's sort of developing a new skill set. Like he's a pretty good passing big man.
Yeah, he is. He is. And, you know, what I can't remember if that was the second quarter, I think so. But a little bit before that, they ran a pick and roll, and he caught the ball there, you know, 10, 12 feet from the bucket, and the lane was open, and he just takes one stride and jumps and dunks. And a few minutes later, they do the same thing, and only this time Donovan Mitchell's a little bit closer. He slides in, try to get the charge for when Steven takes that long stride and dunks. Only this time, Adams just sort of goes sideways past him and drops the ball off for Dort. So I think that was a mid-play adjustment.
Yeah.
It just shows you, to me, it symbolizes how sharp Steven is at the game. In fact, after the game, I decided when I talk to him, I'm going to phrase my questions better, because if you ask him questions about, like I asked him about attacking Gobert and that kind of stuff tonight, he'll answer you. But he gets so technical, it's really not a usable quote.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to make him be more generic. Most of these guys, you know, it's like pulling teeth to get them to be more specific. Adams gets so specific, you can't use it.
Yeah, it's too into the weeds, or like you can write it into your story, but you can't really quote him.
Right, exactly. So, but I think that's the way he sees the game. He's real technical, and I think that's one of the things that makes him special. He's this big brute with a lot of athletic ability, but he's also sort of understands or wants to understand how the game is played. He doesn't really play by feel.
No.
He does exactly what the coach tells him to. And if you got a good coach, that's a good thing. That's a real good thing.
Mm-hmm. Sticking with the centers, I thought Nerlens Noel, I thought he played very well. He had, 4 blocks, 6 rebounds. He did all that in 18 minutes. He's really reliable on both ends of the floor. He's among the NBA leaders in blocks. I looked it up the other day. If he qualified for field goal percentage, he'd be behind Mitchell Robinson and Rudy Gobert for third. He's, I think, shooting almost 69% from the field. So he was a guy that was a little bit of a question mark coming into this for me, because he missed the first scrimmage because of an ankle injury. He played in the second scrimmage. And then he missed the third scrimmage because he forgot to take his COVID test. So we really hadn't seen much of him, but I thought he looked kind of like his normal Nerlens self.
Let me ask you a question, St. Joe. You're down there in the bubble. There's some things to do, cornhole and fishing and whatever else. But for the most part, the biggest problem with the bubble, it seems to me, is boredom. And most guys, I think, would attest to that. So how do you forget to do something you're supposed to do every day? I mean, it seems to me that almost the COVID test is almost like, well, yeah, it's a hassle, but at least I get to do something. At least they let me out of this room. So
it's like the one thing you can write into every day.
Right. I have no idea how that how did that happen? How you forget? I don't know. It's one thing if you get tied up and you're late, but it sounds like as long as you go get it done once a day, wherever you're at, you're fine.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, so he wasn't the only one to do this. Kristaps Porzingis and Paul Millsap also missed scrimmages because they forgot to take COVID tests. And like Billy defended him after the game or after the scrimmage when he told us about Nerlens forgetting to take the test and said that, you know, he's been in his room caught up doing stuff and sometimes he forgets to leave and take his COVID test. But it's just like, you don't want to forget to take your COVID test come playoff time.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I like Nerlens. I realize the game has changed. I realize some teams don't even use a true center. But I find it hard to believe that Thunder was able to keep him for
on that minimum
$1.6 million or whatever it was, you know, chump change, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's a valuable player because, you know, they don't fall that far. I mean, Adams is a wonderful player. Nerlens Noel is not as good as Steven Adams. But they got a professional center when they put him in the game. So, mm-hmm. I like his game a lot.
I think we got to just about everybody on the roster who played today, except Mike Muscala, who played 3 minutes. And Gallinari didn't talk about him too much. He was really hot to begin the game, sort of cooled off after that.
11 points in the first quarter for Gallinari, and they made me feel good during the game or there early. It's a Thunder home game, so they played the Danilo. Gallinari. I mean, I heard that coming over the ESPN broadcast, so I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear it. Well, let's get to a few big picture stuff. Like, we made a lot, wrote a lot about Thunder Jazz finally happening. Like, do you personally have a sense of closure now, Barry, that this Thunder Jazz game is finally got out of the way? Like, you think it was cool that was the first game that we got to see?
Oh, I think it was cool that it was the first game for the Thunder. It really wasn't any kind of closure for me. You know, I wasn't at the arena that night.
That's right.
I was up in Kansas City. We got my game in, by the way, so 4-1 for me. But I thought it was interesting that the Jazz were the first team up. Probably not a coincidence. They probably just went down the Thunder schedule.
Yeah. Although, I mean, they paired the opponents pretty closely, but it's out of order from what was.
Yeah, that's true. Because they've already played. They played New Orleans first.
Yeah.
But I just felt it sort of cool that the Thunder was playing again. Because we've had sports here in the last, 3 months, you know. The golf, the PGA Tour came back a couple of months ago. We've had NASCAR. Maybe the first was NASCAR.
You've had
baseball for a week. baseball for a week. But we really haven't had anything that everybody or most Oklahomans cared about.
Yeah.
Even the last two nights of watching the NBA, I thought, oh, it's pretty cool. I'm enjoying this. But it was different when, you know, when the team you know so well runs out on the court and you know the difference, you know the significance when Hamidou Diallo is the first wing off the bench, mm-hmm. and those kinds of things. And you see plays that you know and those kind. So I just thought it was cool to have the Thunder back in business.
Yeah.
I really did. I thought that was just a neat day. I was a little put off by the 2:30 tip-off. It's good for our deadlines. But
the college football Saturday,
these afternoons, you know, like Wednesday, it's 3 p.m. tip off, 3 p.m. Monday. It's not Martin Luther King Day. That's what's up with that. So, you know, it's going to be odd. These early tip times are going to be very, very odd. But, you know, I guess we'll get used to them.
How about on Sunday, the 9th, 11:30 a.m. against the Wizards? Tune in, everybody.
No, that's not the last game. That's like
no, that's the
halfway through. Yeah.
Yeah.
tip off at 11:30, over at 11:40. That's the way that game will go. The Wizards will be mathematically eliminated by then. So, you know, the Thunder's pretty well set up here because Denver Monday, and Denver's shorthanded. They played today without Murray, Harris, and Barton. So yeah.
Murray's supposed to be back.
Murray's supposed to be back. Well, he's good, but Denver's shorthanded. If they don't, you know, that's a Thunder's only a game and a half behind Denver for third. Yeah. So you win that game, you're a half game out of third place.
Yeah. The Thunder and Rockets are tied. Utah, Oklahoma City, and Houston all tied in the loss column. Utah's one more win. So the Thunder are in fifth. So we're basically the standing shifted a little yesterday. Today we're back where we started. The Jazz are in fourth, the Thunder are in fifth. And I don't know. I think the Thunder would be very happy if the Jazz maybe outperform expectations and stay in that four spot, and the Thunder can stay in that fifth spot because, you know, again, I don't want to read too much into this game, but that might be the only matchup I would pick the Thunder to win a first-round series. And if it is Utah, I think I would pick the Thunder.
Yeah. I think the Thunder wouldn't mind playing Houston. I don't know if they want any part of Denver, full roster Denver. But I don't know that they'd mind playing Houston either. Because they got some defensive guys that can match up with Westbrook and Harden.
Everyone would know Lou Dort's name.
Yes, they they would. The Lou Dort coming out party would be that. So it's going to be fun. I love the fact that how tight everything is in the West. You know, big day for the Clippers. I don't know if the Clippers care, but, I mean, I think the Clippers sort of got pretty good command of second place today. What is it? They up to 3.5 ahead, maybe. Can't remember.
They're two games ahead of Denver.
Two ahead of Denver. So, with 6 and 7 to play, that's a decent little. That's a decent lead. So, I think 3 through 7 is going to be pretty wild, and. You know, well, 3 through 6. Dallas hurt itself last night. Dallas, huge lead on Houston, gave it away. So I think Clippers Dallas is probably pretty set at 2 and 7. But 3, 4, 5, 6 is going to be fun.
Well, and then the play-in for 8, which will almost certainly happen, that'll be fun as well. The Pelicans not off to a good start. Let one get away against the Jazz. They got crushed today by the Clippers, which. No shame in that, but the Pelicans are 0-2. But I still think that sort of back-end race will be fun as well.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the Spurs got a nice win over the Kings. Mm-hmm. Most people have written them off. It's gone great for Portland so far. Portland beat Memphis yesterday in a game that could have easily lost. And so, you know, Portland would be a interesting matchup for the Lakers because we know how hot Damian Lillard can get. And, you know, I don't think the Blazers can beat the Lakers, but they can make them squirm. I think Portland could make them squirm. Whereas Memphis, I don't think could make them squirm. Spurs, Kings, maybe only the Pelicans and the Blazers could make them squirm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd agree. A couple more things I want to get to. I know we talked about sort of the atmosphere during the scrimmages. It's changed a little bit since then as they've added these virtual fans. I know you're anti-noise being pumped in. At least I think you are. I think I've heard you say that, but I'll let you defend yourself. I actually think it's a little too quiet sometimes. I do like to hear what they're saying to each other on the court. You can sort of hear defensive communication, but sometimes it like loses the sense of a real game to me.
It's way they're not piping in near as much noise as I thought they would.
Yeah,
and I much appreciate that. I wish it was quieter because I would like to hear the sneakers squeak. And all the interaction between players and refs, refs and coaches and players, coaches and coaches, refs and refs. You could hear it all.
You could hear the refs' explanations perfectly on those statements. Yeah.
That's right. So I'd like to hear any even more of that, but probably not going to. So I appreciate him not going crazy with the noise. The little touches like the Danilo song. I think you mentioned Rob Clay, his rendition of the national anthem.
Yeah, I didn't mention that, but I wanted to get to that. I thought that was very cool that Rob Clay, I think is he from Oklahoma City? Do you know?
Yeah, he's an Oklahoma City guy, yeah.
Okay, so from Oklahoma City, sang the national anthem, complete show of togetherness and unity that the Thunder and Jazz showed before the game. They all took a knee together. Everyone was locked arms. It looked like every Thunder participated in taking a knee, as did the Jazz. And I asked Vic Reynolds, who was our intern, did a great job this summer. Make sure you read his story about that, because Chris had some really cool touches. His sneakers were basically looked like team shoes from North Carolina A&T, historically black college near his hometown, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And he also had a message for Breonna Taylor on that. So I thought all of that stuff was really cool and really powerful.
Well, it's pretty clear to me that the Players Association was adamant about a baseline amount of social justice talk during the telecasts. It's not just the players in interviews. It's not just the signage on the court. You get a bunch of it from the broadcasters, particularly the ESPN crew. I noticed it the other night. I noticed it today. So to me, that's clear that, you know, I'm not saying they wouldn't have done it anyway or don't want to say it. I'm just saying pretty clear that they made that, you know, standard. We want a lot of talk during the broadcast about that. So they're going to alienate some people, already have. We got the state legislator who wants to get rid of the Thunder's tax break. So
they're alienating themselves. So I don't.
So that's, you know, that's and there'll be some financial repercussions for a lot of franchises down the road for this. But for now, this is not. I mean, this is just the way it is. This was a stipulation of a Orlando bubble. That's pretty clear to me that Chris Paul and Michelle Roberts and everybody else involved made this a, you know, standard operating procedure, and it's not to be even discussed. This is the way it's going to be. Social justice issues are going to be a constant point of discussion during the game, the bubble games.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's been, you know, one of the best things about this restart, and just a powerful, again, show of unity. And it was, if you thought the players were just talking about this and not actually going to take action and call for action and call for change, then you're wrong. Because, you know, one of the things is back when, you know, the protests were happening and, you know, Kyrie Irving and some other players were fearing that a return to basketball would sort of take away from the progress and the conversations that we were having everywhere. They've made sure that this restart doesn't incorporate those discussions and does sort of move things forward and draw attention. So whether people like that or not, that's going to be a part of this. I think it's been very powerful. And again, like, Chris has led this. Chris has been, you know, has advocated for this. And, you know, it's a part of this restart. So I commend them for, you know, not just saying that that was going to be a part of this restart, but for making it part of the restart.
Yeah. So, and, you know, Chris is two or three times that I've seen him, you know, he'll start off a press briefing by talking about that before he answers questions, or if he's asked a question and it's about basketball, he'll talk about social justice before he gets to the basketball. Mm-hmm. So it's clearly very prevalent upon their minds.
Yeah. All right. Last thing I wanted to ask you about, because you're the king of charting every play. Have you seen a half where there's been 2 4-point plays thanks to off ball?
No, I have not. I have not seen. I don't think I've ever seen 2 4-point plays, both of which the 4 points were split up among different players. That's really what we're talking about.
We need some ESPN stats and info, yeah, whatever, on this.
It's a very unconventional 4-point play. But, you know, you make a 3-pointer and the other team shoves one of your rebounders while the ball's in the air. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, for all the rule changes that I like to advocate in all sports, I have to give the NBA props. That's a really good rule. You know, if you make a shot and the other team is, you know, if they do that in college, they either just give the team the ball again or free throws, multiple free throws. And, you know, to me, that's a little bit of a heavy penalty. So I like that NBA rule. If you make a shot and the other team commits a foul on the rebound that could have been but wasn't, one free throw. I like that rule. That's a good, solid rule.
Yeah, I just thought it was like the strangest thing that happened so close together. And just
while we're talking about that, one really good move by the Thunder tonight, they didn't foul much. In the pregame, there was a lot of talk about that, hey, they'd seen the one thing they'd noticed in Orlando through 2 days, lots of fouls. And Billy apparently made that a pretty heavy point of emphasis. Don't foul, especially on, you know, jump shots. And in the first quarter tonight, the Jazz shoot 2 foul shots. In the second quarter, the Jazz shoot 3 foul shots. And so at halftime, Thunder's up 24 or 22, whatever it was, and Utah shot 5 foul shots. To me, that was a huge part of the game. The Thunder recognized whatever, that been a lot of whistles, and the Thunder's been able to say, hey, we're not going to give them this game at the foul line.
Yeah. I mean, Dennis Schroeder's really the only player that got in much foul trouble, and that was sort of associated with his slow start that we talked about. But, yeah, that is a point of emphasis, and I don't know, maybe another benefit of seeing how, like, things have played out in Orlando. You've also seen, like, some insanely high-scoring games so far through 3 days, and the Thunder only held the Jazz to 94 points.
Yeah, the first game, or day one, Jazz, Pelicans, Clippers, Lakers, was relatively low-scoring. But then yesterday you saw crazy scores. And then, so I didn't know what to make of it. But today was, for the Thunder, you know, they had the best of both worlds. It was high scoring for them, low scoring for Utah. So,
yeah,
you know, when the Thunder had their big guys in, they weren't stopped tonight. I mean, SGA plus 15, Gallinari plus 14, Adams plus 15, CP plus 27. You know, they dominated this game, and it was just I thought it was just great fun for all concerned.
Yeah, almost 5 months in the making, and it finally got played. So it was a ton of fun. It's so good to have the season back and to be following these games again. So we'll be back at it with hopefully another post-game pod on Monday at 3 p.m. against the Nuggets. So that'll be another fun one. So, yeah, thank you guys so much, as always, for listening. Hopefully you guys are as excited as we are about the season resuming. Please like it, subscribe, do all that stuff, and we will see you next time.